Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a pineapple, and I love film. As Terry Pratchett once said, time is a drug. Too much of it kills you. And sometimes it goes backwards, which is really quite confusing, like being on acid or something. I don't really understand Tenet. Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Sharon Stone, Kevin Smith, Jameela Jamil, Ricky Gervais, and even Ped Pambles. But this week, it's the incredible musician, superstar, Mr. Curtis Stigers. Oi, everyone. Oi, listen. Happy New Year. Yeah? Don't know when you listen to this, but it comes out New Year's Eve. Happy New Year. Have a lovely New Year. Hope you have a lovely year. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Right, head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Where I think you get about 20, 25 minutes extra chat and questions and a secret that will blow your mind with Curtis Stigers. You also get the whole episode uncut, ad-free and as a video. Loads of stuff to see there. Check it out. patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. If you've not seen it yet, you can still watch the whole of season one of Ted Lasso on the Apple TV Plus app. You've got to watch it. Just if you haven't seen it yet, come on, get on with it. You'll love it, honestly. And the last thing to mention, I'm going to be doing a live episode of the podcast with Always Be Comedy, which is my favourite gig in London. We're doing an online episode for Always Be Comedy with the host of Always Be Comedy, Mr. James Gill. We'll be doing that on the 13th of January. You can find tickets for that at alwaysbecomedy.com. So, Curtis Stigers. Curtis Stigers is an artist, a musician, a pop star, a jazz man, and a real class act, and I was delighted to record this with him. We did it over Zoom. He was awake at 9 a.m, dressed in a suit, looked incredibly smart. He's a very smart guy. I think you're going to love this. It was a joy to talk to him. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 128 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a jazz man, a singer, a saxophonist, a improviser, a multi-platinum recording artist, a trailblazer, a man with long hair, a man with shorter hair, a sex symbol, sure, a DJ, a Patreon, and a living legend. Please welcome to the show the brilliant Mr. Curtis Stigers.
Whee! Thank you. You left out a few things, but that's cool, Brett. Thanks.
I did my best. How are you?
That was over the top. I'm tired. Thank you. It's a lot earlier here than it is where you are.
Now tell us where you are and what time it is and what and why.
It's good. People are going to say, "Shut up, you prick!" But it's actually 9:08 in the morning on Friday in Boise, Idaho, which is out in the northwest part of the states.
You're a jazz man. 9:04.
That's crazy. I had no idea there was a 9 in the morning. I thought there was just the 1 at night. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, That's mad. Also, Boise, Idaho is my co-writer on a show that I do, Will Bridges. He uses Boise, Idaho whenever we write a script set in America and it's meant to be like, you know, Boise, Idaho. And I'm always like, where is that? And he goes, it's a thing.
It's a thing. It's like a, it's like Swindon. You know, I can always get a laugh on stage if I just drop the name Swindon. And I don't know why, but I sort of like Swindon.
That's fantastic. Well, so we've never met before. We're meeting today. We connected on Twitter.
Good old Twitter.
Maybe it annoys you to hear this. I don't know, but I think my mum has always fancied you. Does that annoy you? I don't know.
You know, if the world were made of your mum, I would be the king. It's you know, I love your mum. I've always loved your mom, actually. Well,
this is going to be a big episode for her. And your music has always been around. You've always been, I've known about you forever. And this is very exciting to talk to you. But also when we connected, you said, oh, I am friends with Nick Revel, which blew my mind. Now, Nick Revel, if you don't know, anyone listening, is a fantastic UK stand-up who is kind of a legend on the circuit because he was there at the very beginning. Then he left it for sort of 10 years and did TV work. And then he came back. But when he came back, he started from scratch. Like, he's a real hero. Didn't use any contacts. Was like, no, I'm an open spot. I've got to build my way back up again. He's amazing. How do you know him?
Well, I met Nick through a friend. Actually, he's a film director, a guy called Michael Hoffman. Michael, he made Soap Dish and The Last Station, about a million movies. And he happens to be from here, from Idaho. I know him as, you know, another artist to the world from our little small corner. And they went to Oxford together. Oh, wow. So we met years ago, Nick and I, and he liked that we had cans of proper British ale in our hotel apartment sort of thing where we were staying when we were playing in Soho. And he thought, well, these guys couldn't be as bad as I thought they were. And so we've been pals ever since. And I've seen Nick do his stand up so many times. And he went through a period, like you were saying, where he was out doing six sets a night or four or five sets a night. Well, I'm going to go here tonight and then I'm going to go there and there and there. And I thought the same thing. My God, you know, you could just be sort of resting on your laurels and saying that you did TV and radio for a lot. And he's an artist, and now he's got all, you know, every year he does the Edinburgh thing and builds a sort of an absurd, I mean, his shows are so mind bending and ridiculous. Yeah. That's what it's like having a curry with him. Actually, it's just sort of following him down a rabbit hole.
So did you live in London for a long time?
I've never lived there, but I've spent a lot of time over the years. I started playing, my first gig in London was in 92, and I've just made friends over the years. And I did spend, you know, I guess a couple of months there doing a really goofy TV show called Just the Two of Us. This was back in 07, I think, 08. And it was kind of like Dancing with the Stars, only with singers. And so I was one of the, you know, I was one of the professionals. And there were, you know, at this moment, I can't even remember, but, you know, the judges were Stuart Copeland from The Police. And I mean, it was goofy. And I sang with Penny Smith, who was the newsreader on Good Morning TV or GMTV, all that many years ago. And she's a terrible singer, but a fabulous woman and hilarious. And so we basically just did a comedy routine of it. I mean, she was like Lucille Ball, and, you know, so I would sing whatever song it was, and then she would just be awful but funny as hell. And we stayed on the show a lot longer than we should have. Anyway, so I was there for a while, which was nice. I love, and I also play at Ronnie Scott's twice a year, so I get to spend a week being a Londoner and riding the Tube, and so I know it pretty well, actually.
So you, when I was looking at, and I was looking at your discography and looking at all your stuff, you are, it seems to me, you're like a proper artist, Nick Revel style, in that you could have gone one path, but you seem to have taken quite a few different paths. Seems like you're driven by the art of stuff. Is that true?
I'm driven by the need to shoot myself in the foot.
That's another way of putting it.
I hate my foot and I like to shoot it. Yeah, you know, I've been the bane of publicists and record companies for years because I do something and it's fun. You know, it was fun to have long hair and make a pop soul record that was, you know, right down the middle of the road and, you know, tour with Elton John and Eric Clapton and be on all the TV shows. And then I wanted to do something else. It was sort of like, I mean, it didn't help that everyone started calling me Michael Bolton Jr. I was like, well, I got to get out of this.
It's time to leave.
Yeah. And so I, you know, I started making jazz records in 2000. I grew up playing jazz. I studied jazz in school all the way through school. I was a clarinet player, a saxophone player, and that led me to jazz singing as well. And it seemed like the time to move away from trying to chase pop hits, because that was just brutal. You know, you put out an album and if it doesn't get on the radio in the first 2 weeks, it's a failure. Whereas when I make a record now, I mean, I'm still talking about the record I released, you know, in the middle of in March as my new album. And I'll do that for the next year. And especially because of the pandemic, I'll do that for the next 2 years. And as long as I still talk about it, it's a success. It doesn't matter that, you know, no one's added it to their radio playlist. So it's a lot more fun. And then I just make records that I make the kind of records I want to make. I know, you know, I produce them. I pick the players. Whenever the record company says, hey, you ought to do this, I said, hey, it's going to cost this much to get that person to work on it to do. And they say, yeah, go ahead and do what you were going to do. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Also, the record business wasn't staying up late worrying when my next record was going to come out anyway. You know, at a certain point, it was like, yeah, we had a nice time, but I think, you know, mutually, let's just call it quits. You know, you go back to your thing, I'll go back to mine. And so, yeah, I have a lot of fun and I make enough money as a touring artist to, you know, pay the mortgage and keep my daughter in college. And, you know, I'll never have that big score, but I'm having a ball.
And how have you been coping without live performance, or have you been doing it?
I have not been doing it. No, yeah. I'm it's difficult for me to not be making a living. I mean, it's more the emotional part of it than the, I mean, I grew up, you know, with a single mom, not, you know, not rich, poor. Right. I grew up poor, a poor child. And so the idea of not making, you know, making an income, I've been doing it since I was 15 years old, making money, doing my thing. And I'm not now. I'm busy as hell, but I'm not out there. I miss playing live. I miss doing concerts. That's how I, you know, that's who I am. I like making records. I love being on a stage, telling stories and singing beautiful songs. And so that's been difficult. The thing that I don't miss at all is being on airplanes. Okay. It's been really, I think I might've been built for a pandemic. I might've been built. I'm pretty good at lockdown. I live in a nice house with a big garden. And, you know, we even got heaters for the winter. We've got a couple of those overhead.
Great.
Propane heaters, so we can have people come over and sit 10 feet from us and we each have our heater and we, you know, drink gin and tonics and talk about how cold our feet are but our heads are really hot. And so it's been and I've got three dogs. And so I mean, the other night it was Thanksgiving and I was standing outside around, you know, these actually my friends across the street with a burn barrel far enough away from each other. We're very, 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 very careful and neurotic. But we each of us said what we were thankful for on Thanksgiving. We do that every year, usually around a table with turkey and a bottle of wild turkey. That's the conceit. And I said that I was grateful for the numbing effects of alcohol and and the companionship of dogs. And that's really what's got me. I love my wife too, and she's gone a lot, and so the dogs and I have really developed a close relationship. She runs a homeless shelter, so we're in the middle of a crisis every single day here. You know, I mean, the whole population of the shelter had to be tested last night, including her. So I've not been tested this whole time, but she's been tested maybe 7 or 8 times.
What's happening with the shelter now?
It's all of a sudden taken off. She and her staff have done such an amazing job. They, you know, they provide every guest with a mask. They went from one shelter to 4 shelters. They split them up so that they had more room to distance. And these people, you know, they sleep in bunk beds so close to each other. Yeah. And so they've had to, you know, they've figured out how to distance, and it worked. But now, you know, America is so, Americans are just so broken and so stupid that we've, you know, I mean, we have anti-mask protests here. I mean, it's just like, are you fucking kidding me? It's you can't argue with the virus, pal, but yeah, they do. And so we have, I mean, we had the highest number of deaths yesterday than we've had in the whole thing. It's just, it's mad. And we've never really locked down. And the governor, there are a lot of Republicans here. Unfortunately, the city that I live in is liberal, and but everything around is just wackadoos. And they followed this orange idiot down this path of not taking care of other people. You know, it's sort of like, well, I'm not going to get it. I don't worry. Well, you sort of need to worry about everyone else. You know, it's called human compassion. Anyway, I went off on a tangent there.
No. That's fascinating. It's fascinating about your wife and big respect.
She's a saint. She's just, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, that sounds.
Every day she just goes in there and that's who she is and what she loves. I just help raise money. We've raised funds for this shelter for 14 years, and she's really just been working there for about seven. When we first started doing it, she was a marketing person, and we decided to do it. We decided to create this thing. It's long before we were married, long before we were romantic.
What's the name of the shelter?
Yes, this is good. It's called Interfaith Sanctuary Homeless Shelter. It's in Boise, Idaho, interfaithsanctuary.org. And we're actually in the middle of our fundraising season. And I just yesterday finally put to bed or to death every year we do a two-night variety show at the biggest sort of cool old theater in town. And 20 acts, I produce the show. Jody produces the fundraising, my wife, Jody. And I put 20 acts a night, and it's, you know, singers and actors and comedians and dancers, and everybody does one song. And if you hate what you're hearing, then you're going to like the next singer, the thing after that. And it's become this amazing tradition for people. Yeah. Their kids come home early, you know, to go to the show from college or whatever, just to have the family together for it. And this year we can't do it because of COVID. Mm. So we were going to do it as an hour long sort of streamed event, but a local TV show said, hey, we want to do this, or a local TV station. So we're doing it on the local ABC affiliate. Oh, and I produced an hour long TV show.
That's great. You
know, like, okay, this is my new job. And I've gotten into, because of COVID, tell me when I should shut up, but I suppose this is what I'm here for. I've had a couple of these. I've learned how to use iMovie. I've learned how to shoot my videos and how to hook my fancy recording microphones into my camera systems. And I've been making videos since March. I mean, bad ones, some pretty good ones. And so this was kind of the culmination of all that. And I had help from a professional editor for the whole show, but as far as just putting it all together and putting my videos together, I did that all myself, and it was really fun. It was terrifying. And then now the show is done, and it'll be homely, as you call it. It's homey and in American terms, and homely, which means ugly, because it's not perfect, but we'll see. We'll see if we can. Usually we raise $250,000 every December for the shelter.
Well, if anyone listening would like to contribute, and I think you should, interfaithsanctuary.org. Help out. Curtis's saintly wife, Jody.
Thank you very much. Very kind of you, Brett.
That's really great. Oh, Curtis.
Yes.
I've forgotten to tell you something.
Oh. Is my chair squeaking too much?
No. I should have said it when we connected, actually. I should have.
Oh, what? What?
Probably should have
what?
Said it.
I'm nervous. I'm nervous.
When I sent the Zoom link, I should have said it. I should have said it off air. It's weird that I'm saying it on air, but I'll just say it.
Is this going to upset me?
I don't know. I'll say it. You've died. You've died.
Oh.
Sorry about
Does this have anything to do with that drink I made last night?
You tell me. How did you die? How did you die?
Oh, no. It was the... you're right.
What was it?
I'm a mountain biker. I ride bikes, and I was going a little too fast through the trees yesterday afternoon.
Oh, shit.
And I don't remember anything since then. I just remember smiling and having bugs in my teeth from going, and then there was that tree. That's probably it. Damn. All right. Well,
straight into a tree, motorbiking.
At least I finished.
Mountain biking or motorbiking?
Mountain. Yeah, I don't. No. Just pedaling and yeah, we have mountain.
So you were going pretty fast.
I was going. It's a fun thing to do. It was a fun thing to do. Maybe. Do you think they'll have? I mean, wherever we are, do you think they'll have mountain biking here?
Yeah. Don't worry about that. What I want to know is, do you worry about death?
I'm a very worried, anxiety-ridden person. So I guess I do. Yeah. Thank you. I do worry about death and about, you know, germs. And I mean, this thing has been a little bit rough on me with it. With the just seeing someone in a mask sends me into a spiral. And you can imagine what going to the grocery store is like for me.
Have you always been this way, or is this a...
Well, I think when I was a kid, I didn't think about death at all, you know. Mm-hmm. And plus, I enjoy gravity sports. I'm a skier and I'm a biker. And when I'm doing that, I'm not thinking I'm going to die. I mean, I'm thinking maybe I'm going to fly over my bars and scrape up my whatever. But probably, you know, a person could die doing what I do. And I guess I don't really think about it then. I'm just sort of a worrier. I worry about stuff that I shouldn't worry about. This is getting uncomfortable. I mean, should I?
I'm sorry.
Will my insurance cover this?
There's a doctor comes out at the end of the podcast and sort of talks you down.
As long as they prescribe me some good stuff, I'm fine.
Oh yeah, they got only the finest. What do you think happens when you die? If I may ask, if it doesn't make you too anxious.
I have no way of knowing. Have I? I mean, I'm.
You got no theories.
I really haven't. I just think it's you start theorizing about what happens after you die, and then suddenly you've got the Crusades, and I think that's a bad jump to make. I think there's a great song. I can't even think of the singer because I need one more cup of tea. But the song's called "Let the Mystery Be," you know, and it's some people think this, some people think that. I choose just to let the mystery be. I grew up in going to church and believing. And then I got to a certain point where I realized that they didn't really believe it anymore than I was believing it, you know, and they also were telling me this, and they were telling me to stay away from girls and, you know, beer and pot. And I thought, well, that's bullshit, isn't it? That's not fun. So I did. And just the hypocrisy of Christianity in particular, but I'm sure there's hypocrisy in just about any religion at certain levels in certain people. Mm. It just chased me away. So
do you remember the age you were when you were like, I think this might be.
It's sort of mid-teens. Yeah. Sort of 15. I hung in there for a while. I thought it was sort of interesting, but I think I always liked sci-fi and horror book, books and things. Yeah. And so I just think maybe that was, it was just like, wow, what a good story. There's like, you know, walking on water. And I don't know, but I'm hoping there will be mountain bikes and acoustic guitars to play, to strum.
Well, guess what? Mm. Guess what, Curtis? There is a heaven and it is filled with mountain bike ranges. Mountain bikes. It's got acoustic guitars. You can pick one up anywhere you like.
This is
live performances, all sorts. What there also is in this heaven.
Yeah.
Everyone's obsessed with films there. Obsessed with them.
Yeah. That's
films,
good.
Motorbikes and jazz. Mountain bikes.
Mountain bikes. I mean, motorbikes are fine. I'm not judging, but
you're not annoyed a couple of them are in heaven.
No, that's they actually cut the trails that I ride, you know, years before, and then they were banned from them once.
That's perfect. Well, so what everyone in heaven wants to know is they want to know about your life through film, and the first thing they ask you is, what's the first film that you remember seeing, Curtis Steiger?
I thought it might be Bambi or something like that. I mean, I do remember seeing Bambi, and I have a recollection, but I'm pretty sure it's just my mom telling me about it. You know, that, you know, I said, "Where's Bambi's mama?" You know, really loudly as a, "Where's Bambi's mama?" And I said it in a British accent, which is strange. Yeah, I don't know why I would have, but.
So traumatized.
When I thought about it, it really was, I mean, the strong memory I have is seeing Oliver with an
exclamation
point, right? Yeah.
Oliver.
Oliver! Yeah. And that's what I remember. And it was terrifying. I must have been, it came out in 68. I mean, I've done some research. Okay. It came out in 68. So I probably saw it then or 69. So I was 3 or 4 years old, and wow. You know, it's a pretty edgy vehicle for a, you
it's
know, for a
really
kid.
Dark.
I remembered until doing my research. I remembered it ending with him being, you know, sort of snuck out of the, he finally gets to the good place and everything's yeah. white and clean and he's got all the food he wants. And then he gets kidnapped again yeah. and back into the life. And I remember that being the end. But it wasn't, you know, it goes on and he does, in fact, get to go back to his uncle's, but it does end. And I remember this, too, of the Artful Dodger. He was going to be a good lad. And then he, you know, he's got somebody's wallet and they go yeah. off arm in arm. He and Fagin, I think. Right. So
that's right.
But I do remember just being horrified and thinking that was the end. So maybe I was so horrified that my mom took me out. And I didn't, you know, I didn't see. And that has always been the end for Oliver, was he was just fucked. Oliver wow. was fucked.
That's why you think you're drawn to Bambi as well. You're like, that's how all films end as a child. Everyone's fucked. Oliver's kidnapped. Mom's dead.
Everyone's fucked. Mama's dead. It's yeah. So that was the beginning of my love of cinema, my love affair with cinema.
That was the beginning of my death anxiety. What
and that too. I'm gonna have to talk to my shrink about that.
What, are you an only child?
No, I've got a younger brother, Jake. He's six okay. and a half years younger. So okay. I mean, I was. You know, he's my brother, but I also kind of helped raise him. You know, I spent right. a lot of time just with a single mom. She was always at work. So I, you know, I realized that, you know, probably in counseling and years of therapy that, yeah, I was sort of, I've always been the one that sort of took care of things that kind of, then and that probably leads to my anxiety and sort of worrying, you know, just sort of like, well, I've got to look three steps down the road to make sure that this doesn't go wrong. That doesn't go wrong.
If I may ask, and if this is too personal, don't answer and we'll cut it. But is at what point was your mom a single mom? In your life, always?
She split with my dad, and there's mm-hmm. a story behind that as well. Between second and third grade year, so that's like sort of seven. Yeah, my brother was only one when he left. So
your brother just come in, okay?
Yeah, so I guess I was seven or eight, and then years later, I found out that in fact, mm-hmm. He wasn't my dad, just my brother's dad, and that my dad had died in Vietnam, which sort of just like pushed it under the rug for many more years. And about 10 years ago, I finally connected with my biological father. And now I have a relationship, a friendship with my real dad. My stepdad that was my dad has passed away. And I hadn't, you know, we'd kind of had a hard break many years ago. So I hadn't, but I've got this whole new sort of part of my life that just came out of nowhere.
What happened to your dad who died in Vietnam that didn't die in Vietnam?
No, he didn't die in Vietnam. He just, that was the story.
Yeah.
I think I've finally gotten to the bottom of it. And it's a really good story that someday I'm going to at least do an Edinburgh show.
Do a musical.
There's going to be songs. Consider yourself. An orphan. See, I mean, there's the orphan thing. I mean, this is all coming back. You really should, get accredited and maybe, you know, just start charging for this, Brett. It's a really interesting story, but I truly believe she did think he had died in Vietnam because she said that she found out he was a drug dealer.
Right.
I mean, the stories have evolved. It started out that he was my boyfriend in college and we were in love, but you know, I found out he was a drug dealer, so I broke up with him. And then I heard later on that, and I never told him about you. I never told him that I was pregnant and he went off to Vietnam and died. It's like, oh, okay. Well, that there. Well, it turned out that he did get drafted, but he went to Washington, D.C. and worked, you know, in a hospital. And, my final theory, she finally said something about, well, this guy that wanted to go out with me, I think he was the one that told me that Dennis died. My father's name is Dennis Townsend. So some guy was trying to bang my mom And so he told her that her ex-boyfriend had gone off to kind of, he told her that her boyfriend was a drug dealer and went off to, anyway, long twisted. I'm not sure that I'll ever know the truth, but I do know that my dad does not remember that night because it was just a one-er. Yes. It was a one-er. Wasn't it? Isn't it?
Big one. Look where we are now.
Look, I mean, without my mom's promiscuity, where would I be? God love my mom for running a little wild when she was young.
That's very cool. What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
I do. I do less so as I get older, but I loved scary movies. Alien scared the hell out of me. Alien, I really think, is a perfect film. It's just so, because it was we were in that Star Wars time. We were in that where space and 2001, where space was super clean and everything was like another world. And then suddenly you're on the Nostromo. I mean, I know this movie so well. I love this movie. And it's like a factory. It's grimy and it's greasy and there's steam and it's sort of rough. And even with the scene where John Hurt, where the thing comes out of his chest, they're in like a cafeteria. It's just like, it could be in any workplace. So it felt real. It felt like you could just be there. And then there's this, it's a haunted house movie set on a spaceship basically. With an incredible cast. I mean, John Hurt, right? Yeah, it's John Hurt. And Harry Dean Stanton. I always forget that Harry Dean Stanton was in it. And of course, Sigourney Weaver, who's smart and strong and cool and tough as hell. And she's in her panties and a little tank top at the end. So it was just, I mean, this was perfect for the
There was nothing wrong with this.
There was nothing wrong at all, especially as a 14-year-old or a 13-year-old, whatever I was. It was like, this is a great way to be scared. So.
Yeah, fucking great. What's the film that made you cry the most? And are you a crier?
To answer the second one, yes, I am. I annoy the hell out of my daughter. You know, we'll be watching a movie together, a show together, and I'll start. And she's like, "Dad, it's a dog show, for Christ's sake. This is not. So I do. The movie that I probably couldn't see it again. But that killed me was a movie called The Sweet Hereafter. Did you ever see The Sweet Hereafter?
Is it Anton Egoyan?
Adam Egoyan, yeah.
About the bus crash with the kids on it. Yeah. About Ian Holm.
Yeah. It's from a book. What's his name? Russell Banks. Russell Banks wrote the book. And he based it on an actual occurrence. This actually happened. Bus goes off the road out onto a frozen lake. Accident, slid off the road and the scene of the thing going in, you relive it. Yeah. But it was before I had a kid. You know, I've just got my daughter Ruby. It was before I had that, but it's the aftermath of it, really. The movie is and about the lawyer that comes to town to try to get a settlement so that the company doesn't. So it's just so incredibly brutally heartbreaking and perfect. It's a beautiful film. I couldn't see it again, especially having had a kid. You know, I don't know that I could take it. But I remember crying from maybe the 18th frame of the movie until about 2 days later. I mean, it was just, but I couldn't recommend the film more highly. As awful as it sounds, it is just, it's a poem. It is a perfect little piece of art and surprisingly entertaining. Ian Holm is also in that. He plays the lawyer and he was the robot, eventually the robot in Alien.
In Alien.
There's an Ian Holm theme.
We are all connected. What is the film that people don't like? It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it. You don't give a shit what anyone says.
This was a harder one for me. And so I went toward a movie that I think is underrated. I'm a huge Coen Brothers fan.
Yeah.
I love every one of their films. Mm-hmm. And they made a movie that I think maybe was, it was intended to be the big, you know, they were going to make their big jump and become super successful instead of just really, really successful. And they made a movie called Intolerable Cruelty with George Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Billy Bob Thornton and one other big. Anyway, it's a great movie. It's sexy as hell. You just want them to fuck from the first moment. I hope I can say this on TV. It's just like, please look at you two, just do it. But and it's twists and turns. It's a really smart, funny, dark comedy. And it just, you know, sort of like, oh, I don't know why. I think it's a brilliant movie. I think it's one of their best, and it doesn't get the love that it should.
That is a perfect answer to this question. And I think one of the reasons that doesn't get the, I think it was one of the few films they were brought on, they were directors for hire for. I think they did a rewrite on it. I think there was a director dropped out and they were brought in. So I think perhaps critics and people sort of think of it as beneath the Coen brothers because it wasn't their baby initially.
Isn't that funny? But yeah. It's so much a Coen Brothers film. I mean, it just works like one of their films.
That's a great shout. I might have to watch that again.
Oh, it's great. I mean, Clooney is so good. And he's so good at being, you know, incredibly successful and handsome and his whole thing. And then just getting knocked down to his knees. He's really, he's great at being a vulnerable movie star. You know, I like that. And Catherine Zeta-Jones, is a fine actress, a really good comedian. She was great in that. And she's fairly good looking.
She's okay.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes. That it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's a film that you used to love? You loved it, but then you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh, I do not like this anymore.
When I was young and thought a lot of myself, I used to say that Blue Velvet, the David Lynch film Blue Velvet, was my favorite movie.
Yes.
And it was. Mm-hmm. It was my favorite movie. And then I saw it, you know, 10 years ago again. And I still think it's a brilliant film. And I totally get how it works. It's basically a dream. You know, I mean, I think all of his movies or the ones that I've seen are really just a dream. It's the kind of thing where you're going along like this and then it jumps over here and it's not linear and it doesn't make sense, which is how a dream is. You know, you're swimming in a pool and you're naked and you're embarrassed and you're at a party and then suddenly you're in a classroom and you're, you know, doing something else. And that's how his films are. Love his films, but it's not my favorite movie anymore. I mean, it's so incredibly brutal. And I guess I've just become a little sensitive in my old age. Everything about it is fantastic. Not my favorite movie anymore. It is just too brutal for me. So I don't, and I just think it's a really bad, maybe it showed that I was kind of cool when I was 22 to say, yeah, Blue Velvet, man, that's the best movie. But as a 55-year-old man to say Blue Velvet is your favorite movie, it's like, I'm going to keep my kids away from you, that sort of a thing.
So, that is a really interesting answer. That's fair. What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because of the experience you had around seeing the film, that will always make it special to you.
This was one that I sort of bent a bit here. This is one that I have maybe a surprise. Well, here's the deal. In 1993, early 93, I went with my manager, who's still a dear friend, not my manager anymore, but Winston, and I took our wives to see in the afternoon, which is something I don't often do. We went to see The Bodyguard. It had just come out in November of 92. And we went to see that movie in the afternoon with our wives because I had a track on the soundtrack, which, by the way, in the movie sounds like this. And that's it. It's literally that long, maybe a second longer, but it's coming. It's my song coming through the wall as Whitney Houston is sitting at her backstage in a green room. It's like the song being played by the opening band in the club. You can't hear my voice at all.
But is it on the CD? Is it on the soundtrack?
It's on the
That's
fucking CD.
Huge.
Which sold 45 million copies.
Wow.
Which, you know, you'd think I'd be much wealthier than I am, but because I was on the label that put the album out on Arista Records, they figured out a way to sort of, with all the red tape, and so I'm still in a red position. I still owe Arista Records money for my second album, which I worked on after that, and they just kept making me re-record it. I mean, this is one of the reasons that I was so happy to step away from the pop business. So we went to that, and every time Whitney Houston would sing a song in that movie, my manager would lean over to me and say, "Cha-ching." And so that is my memory. That's why it wasn't the movie necessarily. It was being there with, you know, my manager and our wives, and it just being this, oh my God, I'm in a big movie with the guy with the bangs. What's his name? Kevin Thingy. Costa. Anyway.
That's the right answer. That's a great
It was
answer.
Great. And it led to me being friends with my hero, Nick Lowe, which that's a poster I brought. I actually brought him to Boise when he was on tour and promoted a show of him years ago. And that's the poster from it. But I'm friends with my huge hero, Nick Lowe. I mean, I think he's one of the greatest songwriters in the world. And because I recorded What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding for the Bodyguard soundtrack, his song, after he got like the second 100,000-pound check in the mail or something, I get this, you know, he called me out of the blue and said, "Curtis, thank you so much." And he promised I'd never pay for another meal in London as long as I lived, which was a lie, but he bought a few. So anyway, it was that was a fun afternoon, and funny as hell.
That's very cool. Right. That's cool, man. What's the film that you most relate to?
It's a little corny.
That's okay.
It's more, I'm approaching this answer or this question from more how I related to it then when I saw it. When I was almost 16, I had just started dating a girl who was 2 years older than me. She was a senior in high school and I was a sophomore, and she was just lovely and just the greatest. And she happened to be in the choir, and so she was really into music, and she took me to see Fame, the movie Fame. And, you know, if it's on, I'm going to watch it. It's not perfect. It's, you know, it's corny and it has this, but it's also edgy as hell. And,
it's really dark.
As soon as it started, I thought, well, I could fit right in there. I could be there, or I could be over there next to, and I could be doing that. And I could, it's still, I mean, I didn't expect to get goosebumps saying that, but it really moved me. It made me want to do that. And I was already doing that. I was already, I'd been playing clarinet and drums and starting to really sing a lot by then, but I'd been doing that since I was a kid, and I loved records, but it never sort of, it hadn't really occurred to me, oh my, you know, I could do that. I could go. So that means that movie still means a lot to me, but it meant a hell of a lot to me at the time and sort of changed my life.
Wow. That's something.
Fame! Sorry.
It's okay. It's still in here.
It's right here. Showbiz, baby.
What? Curtis Steigers, here we go. This one's for the ladies. What is the film? What's the sexiest film you've ever seen? Or the men?
Yeah. The sexiest scene or scenes in a movie ever are from North by Northwest. Cary Grant and Eve Marie Saint on the train
carriage.
Yeah. And they're still dressed, you know, yeah. they're not fucking, but she, you know, they're going to later. And eventually the train does go into the tunnel. I mean, there is that famous, yeah. that's a famous yeah. Hitchcock, and the train goes into the tunnel and okay. They even knew what happened back then when the movie came out, but when Eve Marie Saint is talking in that incredibly soft voice and she's just so sexy and she's sorry, this is her hand on the back of his neck, and he's got, this is why, you know, except for those few short years that I had long hair, why now I always keep my hair very short in the back, because there's nothing like a hand on the back of your neck, and you know, in my case, my wife's hand. But she's Thank just you. Doing that, and she's kissing him, and Jesus, it's steamy. Good God almighty. Yeah. I mean, that really, and I saw it when I was fairly young, probably, you know, in high school. And even then, you know, it's like, it's an old movie. You're sort of separate from it because it's from another era. They dress differently. But when Eve Marie Saint starts talking soft and seducing Cary Grant, that's, it's over.
Whew. You are a classy motherfucker. That is a classy answer. And also, for those listening, I didn't mention this, but Curtis, it's, you know, 9 a.m, he's dressed in a suit. It doesn't look like he slept in it. It looks like he got up to put this on.
Thanks for saying that. I have been saying, I just, when I've done anything during this pandemic, I have tried to put a jacket on, you know.
Very, very smart.
Even when it's just audio, and this is, you know, audio for most people, for your Patreon people, of course, it'll be on video. So this is especially for you Patreon folks.
Look at that. His last album was called Gentleman. I mean, the guys.
I just didn't want to stay in sweatpants for the whole lockdown. I just feel like I've got to get dressed.
For those listening, I'm completely naked.
Yes, you're very hirsute. That's the thing. It's intimidating how masculine you seem, and that's that. I didn't get a chance to fanboy about Ted Lasso. Yeah, that's how I hadn't seen you. I hadn't discovered the Brett that is Brett until Ted Lasso. And I just assumed you were going to be gruff and. I mean, you're a really good actor. I mean, I know that you're a stand-up comedian writer, but you're a fucking great actor, and I love that show. I mean, love the show. I just think I'm telling everybody about it. It's such a good show, and I'm sorry I'm screwing up your whole flow here, but you can edit it out later. I really, it's such an enjoyable show.
Oh no, that's staying in.
That's going in. You kidding me?
That's good. I'm cutting the rest of it. That bit's nice.
We could just talk about me for the rest.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. So
you do, but about you have a hairy chest, and I know that from the I've got the one that just kind of pops out here, and so
listen. Since the 1980s, I don't think anyone's seen body hair.
Yeah, there's a lot of waxing, and
it's a real shock to people. But you know,
you're an artist. You're going to put yourself out there and shock the.
Speaking of traveling boners, there's a subcategory to this.
Traveling boners.
There's a subcategory to the question, which is traveling boners, worrying wydons. Is there a film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should?
I hadn't heard the term wydons until this experience, and it's one that I'm gonna save.
Use every day.
I'm gonna use it. I'd say hourly, really. To be honest. So I have a daughter. She's almost 21 now. Ruby is her name, and she's 20 years old. but she was a child at one time, and I watched a lot of kids' movies for many years, and I'm sure this is where this leads a lot of the time, is toward a kids' movie.
Thank God this is where it's leading, because when you opened with your daughter, I thought, fucking hell, I'm regretting asking this question.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't think about the fact that it might be construed that I was going somewhere.
You should have opened with kids' movies, right?
Creepy. So anyway, back to kids' movies, eh? But there was a DreamWorks movie called Monsters versus Aliens.
Yes, and
it's about kind of mutants. It's a five or six cute, fun, hilarious mutants who save the world, basically. And there's a girl who, I think it's on her wedding day, she is. So I think maybe it's a meteor or some sort of sun ray or something, transforms her from Susan, this cute little blonde cartoon, into Ginormica, a almost 50-foot woman. And not only is she really sexy and she's got tight little pants and she's a cartoon, but her name is Ginormica, for Christ's sake. They named her Ginormica.
What are you meant to do? You're helpless against that.
This is not fair. This was just laid out there for me. So I'm sitting in a movie theater next to my daughter and my now ex-wife on the other side of her, and just completely thinking, this is one hot cartoon babe. She was so, and she's smart and she's funny and she, you can tell this is pathological. This is creepy. I really do have strong feelings for Susan / Ginormica.
Yeah,
and I'm not apologizing for it.
You should not apologize for the Ginormica in your pants. Curtis, what is objectively the greatest film of all time?
This is too hard. I listened to your episode with Patton Oswalt, and he just immediately went boom to Casablanca.
Yeah.
And I get it, you know, and frankly, I could have said that because it's maybe the movie that I've seen one of the movies that I've seen the most times. Okay. I love the film. But then, you know, I think, but what about Dr. Strangelove? I mean, perfect.
Fantastic.
And not one, not two, but three Peter Sellers. So amazing. And, you know, I'm sure everybody says The Godfather, but those two movies, Godfather and Godfather 2, really, which are just one movie to me, I can't watch one without the other. And then I love Local Hero. I mean, Local Hero is a perfect little film as well. Apocalypse Now was huge to me. That was the other movie that I said was my favorite movie for many, many years. And maybe still is. I mean, I can watch, if Apocalypse Now is on, I just, I'm done. You know, Martin Sheen saying, Charlie was in the jungle. You know, it's it. So they're just too many. And I apologize for that. I think it's copping out. I agree. But I love movies too much to just pick one. The same way I could never.
I'm afraid you're going to have to. I'm going to pick it for you. I'm going to pick it from your list. You're going to have Dr. Strangelove, because no one said that. And that's a great shout.
It is such a good movie. And I was so grateful to my daughter when I showed it to her and she loved it. I just thought, all right,
brilliant.
I did this right. I raised this kid right. This is the last 15 years.
Yeah.
We're done correctly. Yeah.
Now, as a reward for watching Dr. Strangelove, let's put on Monsters versus Aliens again.
Ooh. Ooh. Ginormica.
What's the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again, other than Casablanca, maybe?
Right. Yeah. L.A. Confidential is one of those movies that it's candy, you know, it's movie candy. It's everybody in it is great. They look great. It had the film noir thing mixed, but it's faster than a film noir. I love that movie, and I've seen it a lot of times. And if it's on, there's no way I'm going to bed, you know, I mean, especially if I've had a pint or two, then it's just, we're going to go to that very last scene when Guy Pearce it's not Guy Pearce. It's the other one. Can you help me with the name here?
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe is riding off into the in the back of the cab with help me with the name again.
Kim Basinger.
Kim Basinger. Thank you very much. It's early. It's 10 now, actually. But yeah, that's a great movie to just watch over and over again. There are dozens of these, though. I mean, I watched Willie Nelson's movie Honeysuckle Rose maybe 25 times when I was a kid, because when I was growing up, we first got Showtime. We first got, you know, the sort of, we got Showtime on cable. So it was, you could watch a movie over and over and over again when it was on. So I remember watching that. And I love, still to this day, I love Willie Nelson. I think he's one of the great iconic songwriters and artists of the 20th century, and has a voice that is, I mean, he's like, his voice is like Humphrey Bogart's face, you know, it's like, it's not perfect and it's the greatest. So anyway, that's the other one I would say is Honeysuckle Rose by Willie Nelson, which is maybe a far inferior movie to
what is it? Is it? I don't know that film. Is he?
It's just, it's basically Willie Nelson. It's him, but he's got another name. And
like the story of his life.
Yeah, but not really. It's a fictional story about a guy who's exactly like Willie Nelson, out on the road, ends up having an affair with his best friend and long time like road manager's daughter, who is Amy Irving, who was delightful. And she's, you know, this country girl talking like this, and she's a nice Jewish girl, really, you know, it didn't really fit, but I didn't care because she was just so amazing. And she was Slim Pickens' daughter, the friend, who's the father of Willie's, anyway, it was Slim Pickens who rode the atomic bomb. Down to Russia and blew up the world at the end. Oh shit, that's a spoiler. Sorry guys about Dr. Strangelove. So anyway, there's a lot of great he sings On the Road Again live on stage. It's just one of those, as far as being a musician and a songwriting fan, it's really worth watching. Oh, cool, that's all, man. Thank you. The End by Curtis.
Thank you. We don't like to be too negative, so we'll do it quick. What's the worst film you ever saw?
This is pretty funny because I don't like saying that's the worst thing. As a matter of fact, I've actually called someone a cunt on Twitter for saying worst band ever, Steely Dan. You question mark? You know, and I mean, I got so mad that I called him a cunt and got kicked off for a day or two. But I hate the idea of the worst thing. It's like don't talk about the best. However,
having said that.
Having said that, and this is all about you, having, you know, as I was preparing to be on your fabulous podcast, I did listen to that Patton Oswalt thing, and Patton Oswalt said the best movie ever was Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
Which I then watched because Patton Oswalt said that, and because you had Patton Oswalt on your goddamn show. And that is such a bad movie. I am so sorry. That is the most
war between you and Patton.
I know. I'm trying. You can tell I'm trying to regenerate my career by getting in some sort of a battle with anyone who's famous. But I was so. I mean, and my wife and I just kept looking at each other and just going, "Ha!" I mean, Ingrid Bergman won the Oscar for best supporting actress. And I love Ingrid Bergman with all my heart, soul, and body, but she was just like, it's just so stilted and wooden, and everyone has an accent that they did not have before. And Albert Finney, one of the greatest actors of all time, is just his French accent is so, or his Belgian accent is so bad. And his, anyway, I did not enjoy that movie. It's not the worst movie I ever made, but I thought it was kind of funny that I was forced to watch it by your goddamn podcast.
This, I mean, this is the pull quote. War against Patton.
This is going to bring my career back, baby. I'm going to be on the pop charts by February.
Patton, are you hearing this? Oh, fucking hell.
Oh my God. I mean, John Gielgud, he sold out a lot in his latter years, but this, no, sorry. Anyway, I could go on.
Save it for Twitter. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
hands down, without a doubt, best in show. Christopher Guest's movie, Best in Show. It's one of his many mockumentaries.
And it's got dogs in it, and you love dogs.
I love dogs. I didn't actually realize I loved dogs as much as I do when I saw the movie. It probably did influence me. But my God, I mean, the cast, every scene, I'm on the floor still. Every scene, everyone is so great. I mean, and I could just, you know, I could reel off the names, but it's just Christopher Guest is brilliant, and his brilliance leans a lot on just knowing all the funniest people in show business, the funniest actors, and putting them there and saying, okay, what we have to do with this scene. Cause it's, you know, as you know, it's mostly ad libs, his stuff improvised. And so it's like, this is where we have to be at the end of this scene. Go. And when you've got, you know, who's in that, Christopher Guest is in it. Michael McKean, Fred Willard. I mean, Fred Willard, you know, doing the commentary. It's just,
he's unbelievable.
It's brilliant. Anyway, love that movie. Love all of Christopher Guest movies. And I love the sort of genesis of all of those, which is not a Christopher Guest movie. It's a Rob Reiner movie, Spinal Tap, which is
the greatest.
Maybe that's, can we go back and say that that's the best movie ever made?
Yeah, you can actually. I'd put that over.
Okay. Yeah. I think that that's you know, was a Rob Reiner movie, but obviously Christopher Guest had a lot to do with it, because he then made a career of making films like that. So there you go. I might go upstairs and watch that after this.
Okay, that will be a lovely day.
You're upstairs, aren't you? You're in the top floor. I'm in the basement.
Curtis Dykers, you have been wonderful. Thank you for doing this. Now, however, when you went mountain biking, just around the corner, you were going through the local woods. You were having a great old time. You were going very fast. You're very good at mountain biking. Very fast.
Oh, yeah. Incredible.
And you were sort of daydreaming as you were doing it. You started to think of something, and you were slightly distracted. And a tree branch that was perfectly spiked was in front of you. And you turned to look at it, and it went straight through your heart. And at the speed you were going, it went all the way through your heart. The bike kept going. Your body was just hanging. And then because of your weight and what the tree did, you then split down the middle. Your body fell.
Oof.
Your head split in half, and your body fell to the ground in
It's not an... So it's not going to be an open casket funeral, is what you're saying.
Listen, definitely not.
Yeah.
So I came along. I was like, I thought, where's Curtis Staggers? I thought he was going to be knocking around the place. Go for a walk in the woods. Ooh. I find you. What?
You discovered me.
What a mess.
Jesus.
It's a mess. And things have grown on you. Animals have been eating you. That's like, it's a fucking mess. There's a lot more of you than I was expecting. I have a coffin with me, as I often do. But the coffin I brought was the size of you. I wasn't expecting all this extra stuff, all these branches and bits of wood.
That's lucky. Lucky.
Yeah, anyway, so I get that spike that killed you. I snap it off, and then I start carving you up with it just to make some room in the coffin. Carving up. I mean, most of you was already an absolute mess, but I got the... Anyway, sure. Stuff all the bits of you into the coffin, but there's more of you than I was expecting, and the coffin is absolutely jammed, packed. And... There's no room in it. There's enough room for me to slide one DVD in the side for you to take to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show everyone when it's Curtis Steiger's movie night in heaven?
Well, it's going to be a bit of a cheat because it's a concert film, but it's more than that. It was directed by Martin Scorsese.
Then it counts.
Yeah, exactly. And it's called The Last Waltz. And it is, it is a film, at least the, you know, basically it's the film of the final concert by my favorite rock band ever, my favorite band ever, The Band, Robbie Robertson, Levon Helm, Rick Danko, Richard Manuel, and Garth Hudson. But it's a bunch of their friends as well, which includes, Joni Mitchell, whom I love, Neil Young, whom I love, Dr. John, whom I love, Van Morrison, whom I love, Bob Dylan, who doesn't love, and on and on. It's Muddy Waters is in it. This is amazing live concert footage mixed with them chatting, especially Robbie and Levon talking about, you know, the early days of the band touring and the stories that they tell. And it's so amazing. Until it was harder to, until you didn't have VCRs, through the time that you had VCRs, I would always have that playing in the, not the green room, but when I made albums at the studio, it would be in the kitchen or wherever we hung out in between takes. I would just have it on a loop. So we just go in, and one time we'd be looking at, you know, Muddy Waters singing Mannish Boy, or we'd be looking at Dr. John singing Such a Night. It's so good. And there's another section of that where they're on a soundstage. They recorded some things again. They did the weight, you know, take the load off and load on three. Mm-hmm. They did that with the Staple Singers, and they did it on a soundstage after the concert, maybe because the version that they did in concert wasn't quite right. And it seems like they're dead. You know, we've mm-hmm. come to this a lot. It seems like when you go to those sound, and Emmylou Harris, the same thing, they do a song with her, and it's out of time completely. And it seems like not only did the band break up and stop touring and all of, and making records, but they died and they went to heaven and they got to make music with Mavis Staples. So love that movie. Couldn't recommend it more. I might, after I watch Local Hero this afternoon, I might go ahead and watch that as well.
That is a very lovely answer, and people in heaven are going to love it.
It was a long answer too. I apologize for that.
Before you go, give us one simple tip for singing for those people listening who would like to learn how to sing.
Learn how to breathe correctly. And I could teach you that, but it would take too long. It's all about breathing. I can sing because I was a clarinet player, and I had a clarinet teacher who made me put my hand on his stomach while he played a note on a clarinet. And it was not pleasant. He didn't make me touch him anywhere else, but it kind of had that feeling. I mean, I'm still a little bit scarred by it, but you have to support your voice. So do that. Also, beer is really good for singing. I've found okay. just having, I sing a lot better when I've had a drink.
Interesting. Curtis Staggs, is there anything you would like people to look out for, to watch for, to listen to before you go?
Well, we did the interfaithsanctuary.org.
Yeah.
There will be a streaming concert. So you can find that there. My website is curtisstigers.com. I'm on Patreon, unless I can't figure out how to upload videos anymore, which I'm having trouble with. So I may just be not on Patreon. But I've got a lot of things on Instagram. I've made little movies of partial songs. I've written these little songs as the Trump debacle has ended, right at the end of the election. Yeah. I started writing these little songs. I would just sit down in front of the thing and just write it. And I think those are pretty funny. I think I'm not going to make any money off of those, but I'm really proud of them, which is of the problem with my whole career.
Curtis Staggers, thank you very much for doing this. I hope you have a lovely death. Good night.
Thank you, Brett. It was lovely to see you.
So that was episode 128. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 25 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Curtis. Go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating, if you will. And instead of writing about the show, write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a very nice thing to read, does help numbers, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much to Curtis for giving me his time. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Latham for the photography. I've got to say this, right? Coming up in the next few weeks, I've recorded so many incredible guests. I'm not going to say who's up next or what order they will be coming out, but little heads up, here's some treats for you. How's the name Julian Barrett sound? Yeah, you like that? What about Noel Clark? What? Yeah, I got him too. What about... no, I'll tell you what, the rest of the secrets. I've said too much. Matthew Crosby? Yeah, he's coming back. Shit, I've said too much. All right, that's it. So that is all I need to say for now, except to say thank you to everyone who has been listening to this podcast. I hope you have a lovely week. and a brilliant new year. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.